a father of 12 kids. My wife and I have been married for almost 40 years, be 40 years in December. My wife would love to have been here, but because of all the other things we're doing, we just moved in the last week. So we lived for 21 years in Hoosick Falls, you know, right where Hoosick Falls is. And we just moved over to Bennington, so we literally moved 6 miles from one house to another. But I owned a dairy farm, and we sold the farm, and we had a big 7-bedroom house, and we didn't need a 7-bedroom house. And we were like, we don't want to keep maintaining this old house, so let's sell everything. And we bought a little ranch in Bennington. I have three children who still live at, well, I have three children that still will live here. Two of them have graduated. Actually, two of them graduated from Adirondack Community College. Right here. Well, the two that live there didn't both graduate from there, but the two that live there both are graduate from college and they have jobs. And then I have a daughter who is going to be a junior at Liberty University in Virginia. And so she just graduated from Hudson Valley, and now she's going as a junior to Liberty University. And then we have two little ones that go to Malawi with us. They're 12 and 14. You could pray for Silas. He's 14. And there's just no boys 14 that we've come across that are in Malawi. The families that have boys that age all send them to Rift Valley Academy in Kenya to go to high school instead of keeping them with them in Malawi. So that's kind of a disappointment for us, but something to think about. So our story, where are we from? So my wife and I have had a heart for missions all of our lives. We grew up in those families that always had the missionaries stay at our house, and we were always interested, and I've gone on all kinds of short-term, you know, 10, 14-day trips to different countries, and was just always interested in that. But we grew up in a group where it seemed like most of the missionaries had to go to seminary to become a missionary. And I was a worker, so I have an engineering degree. I worked at a company for 12 years as an engineer, and then I decided I wanted to stay home with my family. They were having too much fun with all these kids at home. And so I bought a dairy farm south of Utica and learned how to become a dairy farmer. Always figured that if I didn't succeed, I could just go work at McDonald's or get a job somewhere, since I did have a college degree. But God blessed us, and we did well. And then that's how I know John, from the Utica area. And then we moved to Hoosick Falls 21 years ago. We bought a dairy farm there, so we enlarged. Our kids were doing a lot of work for me, so we could do a little bit more, and driving tractors and everything. And so we bought a bigger farm over here, and we did that. And we just always felt called to missions, and I was going on different missions trips. And my wife felt, I'll just share part of her story, was she felt like her job was to support her family and encourage her kids to go into missions. And so all of our kids have been on missions trips around the world, different places. One of our children, he and his family are full-time missionaries with teen missions. And I have other kids that are married and have jobs, but they still have a heart for missions. And so they're interested in that. And, you know, if we look at how sinful and how terrible we are, and we think about how gracious God is to us, don't we want to share that with others? You have come through a hard time, and you say, how could anyone come through that without knowing Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior? And without having that peace that we sang about in the song? How can they come through those situations? It's just mind-boggling. How can they do that? And so, I mean, that's what causes us to want to share Jesus with other people, right? And so that's, I mean, really, everybody's a missionary. Don't just title me as a missionary. Everybody's a missionary, and I'll talk about that as we go along here, that we all have a job to do. And it might be the person across the street. It might be someone in your own house, you know, to share Jesus with them. So my wife and I always had a passion for missions, and we thought, well, when we get all these kids married off, we'll be free, and we can go. But see, we still have these two smaller ones. And so we felt like, you know, I'm getting older, and it was like I thought I had 10 good years that I could go to some foreign country and help people. And so we pursued looking into opportunities, and through that we found this opportunity through a lot of connections. We found this opportunity in Malawi, and we had prayed for Malawi for years. One of our daughters, who's coming tomorrow, was in Malawi like 10 years ago for a summer with teen missions, and so we had started praying for that country then. And then a son of ours lived there for 6 years, leaving just 6 months before we went to Malawi, and we thought we might overlap, but God had better plans. His plans were for us to get his car and all of his furniture. So we got all those things. And so we rent a small house or medium-sized house in Malawi, and all the stuff that we have, you have to collect. It's an empty house that you rent. And so we, you know, got his stuff, so refrigerator, stove. So it was nice when we went to Malawi to live there full-time. When we first went there, all the stuff was already delivered to this house that was rented for us. So it was a good way to start. And why Malawi? Actually, I was thinking about, you know, what I could do, and I saw this job opportunity in Cameroon with a mission that we are with, and it seemed like a good fit. And I went through the process of my son had served 2 summers in Cameroon, in northern Cameroon, and they spoke English. And so that was just my only thought, was it's an English-speaking country. And lo and behold, it's a French-speaking country in the southern half, and that's where the job was. And so I would have to go to language school for a year to learn French. And then, as one French teacher told me, yeah, you go to language school and you learn French in France, and then you have to kind of change it just a little bit because you're in Africa, you know, so they're not exactly speaking the way they do in French, in France. So that just didn't seem like a good thing for a person that's getting older. And so we were looking at other opportunities. And so Malawi is called an English-speaking country. High school, college, government is all in English. And so that's, you know, you think you're doing great, but, you know, still they speak Chichewa. And so Dave can tell you. So they speak Chichewa. So when they speak English, they have this heavy accent. And then when they speak English, they're not speaking American English. They're speaking British English. And so they might say things to you, and you're just like scratching your head, like, what are they talking about? And my two easiest examples are that as a mechanic, we talk about turning the bolt clockwise, you know, righty-tighty, right, clockwise. And when we want to loosen it, we want to go counterclockwise. That's the American CCW, counterclockwise, to loosen something up. They don't use counterclockwise. British English uses anti-clockwise. And so after a couple weeks of me telling them all about counterclockwise, and I'm like, the opposite of clockwise, and they're like, well, no, that's anti-clockwise. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I had to adjust my thinking to calling it anti-clockwise. And my other example that I kind of always chuckle about is someone would ask me where something is, and I'd say, go down the hall and turn left. And they're like, what's a hall? Because they use corridor. And so when they say it with a Chichewa accent, corridor, I'm like, what are you talking about? Go corridor. They're talking about the corridor, you know, which I understand the word. I mean, I'm sure you all know the word corridor, but it's just not my normal go-to word when someone asks me, you know, where's the office or where's the bathroom, you know, go over there. So those are kinds of things that you pick up on. CIM for just a minute, Community Impact Malawi. So we went and visited Community Impact Malawi. We have leaders, they're Fred and Cindy, they're from Iowa, and they've been there for 7 years, and actually they are good friends with Edwin, who Rick and Gail know, and so they're connected to them, and Fred is, he's a pastor, and he's preached at Edwin's church a couple times, and they have a good connection together. And so Community Impact Malawi was started by them. They actually went with another organization called Ancient Path, which does dramatic and musical things for children, kind of like doing a CEF program. But it's a summer-long program where kids learn drama and they learn to sing songs. And they were involved with that, and that was how they just got a heart for Malawi, and then they wanted to go full-time. And so that's how Community Impact got started. So what Community Impact's mission is changing one Malawian life at a time to follow Jesus. And so they started working with young people, and so our mission is all about trying to help younger people, mostly high school graduate age, right in that age range. And the problem in Malawi is it's such a poor country, there's not a lot of jobs, and there's not a lot of job opportunities, and so they need some kind of a skill other than just having completed high school. And so they started with an internship program where they were just training them in business. Came along and they started a sewing program. So they have a tailoring program. And so right at our Community Impact meeting area, we have a tailoring program. So there's a morning and an afternoon class with 10 students in each class. And then also in the Zaleka refugee camp, which is about 45 minutes to an hour away, they also have a tailoring program going there for 30 students, 15 in the morning and 15 in the afternoon. And so that was just give them a skill so that they could make some money. The problem that even Gail and I were talking about, is you can learn the skill, but then we try to have times when they could come use the sewing machines because it's expensive for a Malawian to buy a sewing machine, but how do you continue to sew without a sewing machine? And so that's one of the hurdles we're trying to work through. We're thinking about doing like a little center with just a few machines. The problem is that in Malawi, it's not theft, but in their mind, but if you have something you're not using, then they can use it, and so they'll take it and use it. And so if things aren't guarded, they're, you know, think about in America, like we all have, you know, especially farmers, you have other cars and tractors and stuff parked outside your house, you know, that you don't use, but you want the parts off them. Well, in Malawi, that would be like, well, you don't want it, so they'll just take it, and it's gone. And so if you have a sewing center, someone has to be there watching the sewing machines. Otherwise, parts of the sewing machine, the bobbins or whatever, the needles would be gone because they have a better use for them than you had, and so it's gone. And so that's one of the challenges we're trying to work out, is having a sewing center where they could come use the machines. So they started with sewing, and they had their internship program, and so they're mentoring some young Malawians to become leaders, and they're teaching women. It's a women's program for the sewing, and they wanted to do some men's programs. And so we went and looked at what they had and talked about opportunities. And so my wife and I went, and we actually went to some different groups of people and asked them what would they want to learn for a men's thing. And they said, mechanics, welding, carpentry, construction. And so he's like, okay, well, you know, I guess we could come up with something in each of those areas, but you have to start somewhere. And so we came back, and we talked to Fred and Cindy, and we worked it out for our support and our situation that we could go. And so I went, we went the very end of March in 2023, and I was just preparing a class and figure out where we would do it. And then they also decided to start a preschool. And so last summer at this time, I was renovating a small house to make into a preschool. And so it was in really bad shape. We had to fix a lot of the cement and paint all the building and make it all look really nice. So it was a fresh preschool to start in September. And so another ministry of community impact was, some of the women coming to the tailoring had small children, and how could they come to the tailoring when their small children were with them? And so it was like, okay, maybe we should start a preschool. So we started a preschool. We just had the graduation was just on Thursday. They graduated six of the students, so they can go on to what they call reception, kindergarten. And so they have 36 students already enrolled for next year, and that's what we're calling our capacity for our preschool. It's an English preschool. The children all learn Chichewa at home, so they want them to learn English, because in order to go to high school, you have to know English. And so it's a good start in their lives to learn English. And so even the Bible studies are told in English, but then they'll also tell them in Chichewa to make sure they fully understand what was talked about in the Bible class with the students, these three, four, and five-year-olds. And so we have a preschool. My wife was the director of a preschool in the United States, and then she's homeschooled for a lot of years. For 36 years, we've had kids being homeschooled. And she's run a lot of co-ops. You can ask John about that later. We had a good co-op going in the Utica area, and we started a good co-op down here in Hoosick Falls, of averaging about 100, 120 kids in our co-ops. And so she ran those. And so she's, you know, she's a very organized person. Dave will laugh. She's very organized. She gives me a little list of all the things that got to be done, and, you know, watches over everything. So she keeps all that. And so she's doing that with the preschool. So, again, in Malawi, we want to put Malawians forward. So the teachers were trained by our staff, by my wife, Cindy, the other missionary, and Lady Sylvia that works with us. They were trained to be teachers. We didn't want Malawian teachers because in Malawi, everything is rote. So you just sit there. I tell you a word. You say it back to me. That's all school is. Kids don't have books. They're not even familiar with books because they don't have them available to them. So our preschool is full of books, full of puzzles. And the teachers just love looking at all the stuff because they never had those things when they were kids. I mean, just imagine never having seen a puzzle, you know, seen very few books. So they're just all excited to be a part of this. And so it's just a fun preschool for the kids to come. And the parents are just thrilled out of their mind. It's just, that's why we're already full for this coming, starting in September. So because people just want to send their kids to the English preschool. And so Community Impact has the tailoring program, the preschool, and so I'm the Barnabas Center. So that was an encouragement. That was why we picked Barnabas. And I'm doing mechanics training. And I think Dave had a nice video all about that. You could play that, and then I'll keep talking.
So I'm Chuck Phippen. Yeah. We're in Kowali, which is a section of Lilongwe, where we have our Community Impact Center. And this is called the Barnabas Center right here, where we're doing mechanics. So I have 10 young men that are working out in various projects. We started with a smaller engine, worked our way up to a bigger genset engine, and now this is our KK engine that came out of the Tuk Tuk KK you can see right there. So we totally disassembled the engine down to basic nuts and bolts and little pieces, and then we've reassembled it, and tomorrow we're going to be putting it back inside the vehicle. So then we'll start it up. And so that's what our program is. It's really a discipleship program. We spend about an hour in the Word, answering questions, talking about a relationship with Jesus, And then we're trying to learn a little bit of a skill that we could use to make money.
So notice the guy in the orange hat.
And then we have a little truck that you saw outside here. We got this small truck and we do the same thing. The thing nice about the truck is four students can put it up on its side, right inside where the KK was, and we can work on the bottom and take everything off and put it all back together. And then the other thing is it's, it doesn't have all the electronics, so it's just an old basic four-cylinder engine. We tear the engine all down, do a valve job, put it all back together, and there it is.
Thanks, Dave. So Dave got to come to the Barnabas Center one day, and he took all these pictures and videos of us, and it's great. He put that together for me. So just the excitement of the Barnabas Center. So it's a 16-week program that I'm running for mechanics. I mean, all of us here have a pretty good concept of what a wrench looks like. A lot of these people have never even seen a wrench before. You know, they don't have any tools. This is a poor, Kowali is a very poor area. It's a township. Driving in is kind of bumpy and ruddy just to get to where our building is. Luckily, our preschool, which is across the street from where our community center, our community impact center is, it's across the dirt road, but the other side of the preschool is out on the tarmac road. And so that, a paved road is a very valuable thing in Malawi because there's not many of them. And so that's where most of the cars drive. So you have to understand that they tell me that 7-8 years ago, there were very few motorcycles. And now there's like motorcycles everywhere. And 3 years ago, there weren't that many cars. And now there's more and more cars. And so just as their economy grows a little bit here and there, pogono, little by little, they get more and more of these forms of transportation. And so then as you saw, the KK, which is what they call it tuk-tuk in Asia, the little three-wheeled thing. Those are taxis. And so you have a lot of those in the city a little long way. The other parts of Malawi don't have those. They're not even allowed in Blantyre because Blantyre is hilly. That's the other biggest city in Malawi. But in Lilongwe, which is fairly flat, I mean, there's little bits of hills, but they have enough power to get up the little hill. Not in Blantyre, it's too steep. So our mechanics program, I'm just going to talk about that just for a second. So the whole focus of everything, the tailoring, the internship, the Barnabas program, is discipleship. And we're going to talk about missions and discipleship in a minute, but just think about that. We want to disciple people. We want to present the gospel to them. We want them to have an understanding of the good news of Jesus, right? And we want them to grow in that news and receive Christ as Savior and grow. And so we spend a half an hour to begin with in our Bible study time. And by the end of the 16 weeks, 4 months, it takes about an hour because of questions and thoughts and everything. And so it's just, we kind of play it by ear how long it takes. I mean, I'm kind of in charge of it, but part of it, my last class was mostly in Chichewa, so they all had Chichewa Bibles that you saw in the picture. Those were Chichewa Bibles, and I have a translator that works with me. He's a graduate from my first class, and he speaks very good English, and so he and I go back and forth, and I read the Bible in English, and they read the Bible in Chichewa, and then we use the Bible study method where the first thing we talk about is where do you see God in the passage? And then we talk about where do you see people in the passage? And then we say, and how does that affect you? What is it telling you that you need to do? And then we talk about, and who needs to hear this message? And we'll think about that. So our focus is discipleship. Our focus is presenting the gospel. Mechanics is a way to attract some men. They come. We shoot for 12 applicants. As you can see, when you're working on a table with one engine, it gets kind of crowded when you have too many people around it. We really are shooting for 10, but we take 12 applicants because what happens is this is every day from 7:30 to 12:30, Monday through Friday. Is in the first week you lose a couple people because it's just too much of a commitment, and so we end up with about 10, and actually the class graduated 9, so we did pretty good. My first class only graduated 7, we lost a few more, but sometimes you lose them for a good reason. They got a job, and it's like, whoa, they got a job. That's exciting to think that they got a job because jobs are hard to come by, and so if their job doesn't work out, they can always come back to our class later and the next time coming around or whatever. So guys' lives, they're young. Their average age is 20. Malawians might be a little bit older when they graduate from high school because high school is not structured kind of the way American is. As long as you can pay school fees, which costs money, you can keep going and you can improve your score. So they want to get the highest score they can to get a chance to get a better job or opportunity to go to college. And so they might do high school for 5 or 6 years to keep improving their score. They take the tests, they can get better score. They can say, I'll do it again next year. They go back, go to the school all year long, take the test again and get a better score. And so that's why the average age is 20. They're just out of high school. And they come to the mechanics, some of the things we did in the video there. So they have no knowledge when they come. I have a manual that we work through, understanding basic tools. And so I learned a couple of interesting things. I don't know if people are familiar with socket sets, but, you know, in Malawi, everything nut and bolt that we work with is metric. So we have all metric socket sets. But all socket sets are driven by either a quarter inch, 3/8, half inch, or if you go bigger on a farm, 3/4, 1 inch. But the drive is always in English. And they're always asking me, well, what's 1/4? Like, what is that? And I'm like, so I have it all laid out on the board, and they're still scratching their heads, and like, fractions are just something they don't want to deal with. The socket itself is metric, but the drives are all, and so we lay them on the table, is the 3/8, you know, because all the drive units, good mechanic question for you, go home and look in the book. All mechanics tools across the world, the drives are in 1/4 inch, 3/8, half inch, but the socket might be all metric. So, and the adjustable wrenches are all metric too. That's free. So we learn about tools. I lay tools on the table. They have to learn the right names for them. Again, because Chichewa is not such a widely spoken language, almost all the tools they would say in English anyway, because they don't have a Chichewa word for it. They might have a Chichewa-wise word for it, where they kind of make it sound like something similar, but it's not exactly the word we would use. And so there's part of the learning process. And the reason why I tell them that is, here's a good lesson. First of all, we tip that truck over and work on it. But in most cases, they have to slide underneath there. There's a few places where there's a pit. There's a few places where there's lifts, not many, in the city of Lilongwe. Most of the time, you're working on your back, just like, you know, those of us that grew up working on your car in your driveway. You kind of just slid under there and worked on your car. And so that's what they do. And so I try to tell them, if you're underneath there and you need a part and you need to be able to tell the other guy what, or a tool, you need to tell the other guy what tool you need. You need to know the right name. If you say, oh, get me one of those things, what's he going to get you, you know? And so that's why we try to learn the names of all the tools, all the different types of pliers that we have, vice grips, screwdrivers, et cetera, and so that they can tell someone what to get them when they're laying underneath the vehicle. And so that's just an important concept, and they understand that after we talk about it and think about it, that, yeah, I guess I've seen guys laying under there, you know, what do I need to know? So just, you know, in our mechanics class, we do that. And then we go through, as you saw in the video, we start with a small, I got donated to me, a lawnmower engine, which has a hole in the side of the block, doesn't run, but it gives us the opportunity to take it all apart, put it back together, and then we go to a bigger gen set, which is about a 18 horsepower engine on it, and then we do the KK. And then the motorcycle you saw, I was able to buy an inexpensive motorcycle that was in rough condition, and we totally rebuilt it and sold it for a profit. And so that gave me money to buy the next motorcycles. And I was able to find a local place where I can get motorcycle pieces, parts, much cheaper than you could in America. It's amazing. When you can't get car parts, but you can get motorcycle parts. So think about missions and thinking about what it takes to be a missionary. What we're looking for, what they're looking for in places like this, are people that have skills that they could share with other people. And, you know, you think, well, I don't have all those skills, and we're going to talk about excuses, but if you just know some basic things and you can read a manual, I mean, I don't know everything about, how many people here have a KK at home or a tuk-tuk? Nobody. I don't know everything about that thing, but you know what? Now we have a little phone that you can Google all kinds of questions on there, and sometimes the answers come to you in Indian, and I don't understand what the guy's saying, but I can look at the picture and watch what he's doing, and I could figure out how the thing goes together, right? And so just some basic knowledge in some of these areas. I mean, I have said this to my children. It's like, you guys are light years ahead of when I was a kid, because if I had to fix something on my car, if I didn't have the manual, I might have to go find one to buy one. I'd take it apart and see what I got and, you know, try to figure out to put it back together. But they can just Google it on their phone while they're standing there. Like 5 seconds, it says, do this, and you need this tool and that tool. You know, and it's the same in Africa. I think only 3 of my nine students that graduated had phones that could do internet, but 3 of them did. And they can share it with the other guys. One guy would sit there all the time and say, oh, let me look it up. And he'd find it, and there it was. And they had the ability to grab all that information quickly, where, you know, in the past we didn't have that. And so now it makes it a lot easier to teach something like how to take a KK apart, because you can just Google it and you can get all the information from a KK shop in India. Shows how the guy put it together, and you can take it apart. So I wanted to think about missions and missions excuses that we all have. And so as a missionary, you know, I wanted to just start with the Great Commission. It says, Matthew 28:19, go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to the end of the age. So, you know, we're all familiar with that verse, and who does that apply to? It applies to everybody, you know? And that's one of the things that I want to think about, is that it's not just somebody that goes to Malawi and does this. It applies to everybody. It applies to where you work, where you go to school, your neighbors, all those things. And how do we walk that out? And how are we doing with that, you know? And so as I think about it, it made me get on this topic of excuses. And you're like, what, excuses? Yeah, you're like, the dog ate my homework. You know, those kinds of excuses, right? So I want to tell you that the Bible is great. You know why? Because the Bible's not perfect people. There are people like me that make mistakes. There are people like me that do bad things. The Bible's great. A lot of people in the Bible that make excuses. And so we're just going to pick up a couple of them, but I want you to think about that we all make excuses. And why do we use the excuses? We might say, oh, I can't do this. I can't do that. I wasn't trained. I didn't go to seminary. I don't know enough. I can't talk to people. I can't stand in front of people and talk. I mean, I'm not really a talker. I mean, you come to my class, I say a few things, they work on it. I don't have to talk the whole time. You know, I'm not a person that really, this isn't my normal thing to stand in front of talking to people all the time, because I don't usually have to do that. I mean, I'll tell you, I did teach, I taught seventh grade, Mount Markham School District, West Winfield, New York, for 1 year. And I would come home, I was so tired, I never talked so much in my whole life. I had five classes. And they were all the same. It was technology. It was the same class five times. You know, you just do the same thing over five times. It's like you're pretty bored of it by the end of the day. But my voice was like shot, because it was like talking all that time, because I'm not a person that talks a lot. It was just like, oh. So in our discipling time in our Barnabas class, I wanted to point out the guy with the orange hat, because in my group that I just had, so we started in February. And about the end of April, we were talking about stuff, and one guy said, well, what does it really mean to be born again? We said, that's a really good question. ABCs, you remember the ABCs? We admitted that we were sinner, believed that Jesus died, was 3 days in the grave, rose from the grave, confessed with our mouth that Jesus Christ is Lord, and you're saved, right? And so we talked about that, and so we had five guys out of those nine that wanted to follow Jesus. And the guy in the orange hat, I pointed him out because his name is Mapaso. He was like so excited. He went home. And so his testimony, I'll just share you part of his testimony. Before I came to Barnabas, this is what he told us. Before I came to Barnabas, I was mean to my sister and my parents. I wouldn't listen to them. And I was becoming a drunkard. I was drinking all the time, drinking beer and hanging out with guys on the street. And I just wasn't a good, the things that you've said, I've become a nicer person. But then I gave my life to Jesus, and he goes, I don't understand why you guys didn't baptize me yet. I want to get baptized. And so I talked to Fred. I said, hey, Fred, I got a student that wants to be baptized named Mapaso. He's the one that had the orange hat on, wears orange hat every day. He wants to be baptized. What could we do? Could we have a baptismal service? And Fred goes, yeah, well, we need a tank, something to baptize him in. I'm like, okay, I'll work that out. So I went and found, in Malawi, a lot of people have water tanks up in the air because the water's hit or miss. So if you have a tank of water, when the city water's on, you can fill your tank. And then you've got, like our house, it lasts about 4 days if there's no city water. And so I went to the place where they sold those tanks and picked out one and took it home, took a skill saw and cut the top off of it and just made a tub out of it, right? And so we had our first baptismal. Well, we had our baptism service. So I didn't say this. At Community Impact, every 2 weeks on Tuesday, we have a worship service. And so we said, well, let's do the baptism at the end of the worship service. So all the class, all the Tabitha girls, the sewing, all the Barnabas guys, the interns, the staff, everybody comes, and the preschool comes once a month and sings some songs to us. And then we have a person as a speaker, shares from the word. We sing songs together. We spend some time in prayer. And so that's our every other week worship service. So we said, well, we'll do the baptism at the worship service. So we did. And all the everyone else was there, right? So they got to see it. So then two more guys said, hey, I want to be baptized. So I had left, but they've baptized two more people in July at the next worship gathering. And so a church is growing, church is forming right there in Kuali. And so that's part of the plan is to have a church right there. And so that's what we're working on. And Fred said to me, he goes, well, now we've had a baptism. I guess we have a church. Let's get started. But what we didn't want to do is we didn't want to start a church with an American standing in front. We want it to be Malawian. And so we're working with two guys are called ministry assistants. And so one of them comes to my Bible study regularly in the morning. And we're working with them as pastoral interns so that they could become the pastors. One of them graduated from what's called the African Bible College. So he has a Bible background, but he just needs a little nurturing and direction, and he'll be a good pastor too. His name's Joel. I think Dave met him. And so we're working with these two guys, Vinny and Joel, to become their pastor interns, and we're training them so they become pastor of the church. So in Malawi, one problem is, I'll throw this out there, white people attract a lot of attention, and sometimes for the wrong reason. And so we don't want a church that's about white people, right? We want it to be a Malawian church, and so that's why. It's the same with our preschool. On the front, all you ever see are Malawians. My wife and Cindy are in the background helping. They have teacher meetings every week or every other week, and they encourage the teachers, and they kind of oversee what's going on, but they're not the people that interact with the community. And so that's because that would be the wrong reason to come to the preschool. We want you to go to the preschool to learn English with Malawian teachers. And so it's the same with community impact. We don't want a church that's about white people. We want a church that's Malawians. And so that's what we're working towards. And the same, even Michelle, we have a lady, Michelle, who has been helping with our sewing centers. And she's from South Africa, but she's white. So there again, she works with the teachers and helps them that are teaching the sewing get them organized. And Barnabas, yes, it's me, and you saw me in the picture. But I'm raising up Joshua, and he's going to be able to teach a class. So this coming fall, I start another class in September. But I'm hoping that in February, he can teach the class, and I could go on to something else. So the goal is to raise up people that can teach the Malawians that can teach the things and not have it be the white guy out in front. And so that's what we're working towards. So in Barnabas and our discipleship time, as we think about what we're learning, we've talked about who we are and who are we going to share what we learned about today with. And of course, the first thing everybody says, oh, I'll tell my family, oh, I'll tell this guy, I'll tell some people. But they're not specific. And so we've said, okay, we need to be more specific so you're accountable that you actually went and told this person. And so we ask them now to share one person. This is every single day, so 5 days a week. So they're every day, who are you going to share with? Who are you going to share with? And we try to pin them down. And if they say somebody that we know, we'll go ask them. And so that kind of makes them a little bit more accountable because, it's kind of an excuse to just say, oh, yeah, I'll go tell whoever needs to know. It's like, And so as we talk about that, excuses come out. The other thing we want to talk about is being present. And so, this is what Gail's ministry is, being present. And we found that in Malawi, and actually I've been told this several times now, just the fact that you're here with us means a lot to us because we're like the overlooked poor in the world. And it's like, well, it's not true. People are praying for you, but if they don't see someone come and interact with them, and being present sometimes, here's your context. You're in the store. I'm guilty of this. You're in the store, and you see John, and he's going down a different aisle with his cart, and you're like, oh, I don't want to talk to John today. He'll take too much time, and so you go down a different aisle, right? I'm sure we've all done that, right? But sometimes, sometimes you just need to be present with that person because maybe they have a need. They want you to pray with them or something. But if you go down the other aisle, you don't know. So you want to be present in their lives. And it's the same in Malawi. We just want to be present in their lives, not say, oh, we're too busy. We got to go here. We got to go there. But we need to be present. We need to be there with them and encourage them. And that's what the students say. When I said the class ends at 12:30, it really ends at 12. But most of the time, we're really there till after 1 because they just want to hang around and talk and work on stuff and find out information. Because, first of all, if they go home, they're just sitting there. They have nothing to eat. So, they don't have a whole lot to do. So just being with them is an encouragement to them and spending that time with them. And so I want to go back to thinking about excuses and thinking about how the Bible is so great with excuses. So if we just think about it, we won't read all these passages, but if we go to Exodus chapter 4, God calls Moses. And Moses says, oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. I can't talk. What does God say to him? I will be with your mouth, and I will teach you what you shall speak. Moses still says, I need somebody else. I can't talk. I can't stand in front of 10 students and show them how to use a wrench. You know, get somebody else. So at our Barnabas class, as these guys started to grow, we decided maybe they need to do some evangelism. Let's, you know, put some feet to our faith here. And so I asked them, would they be willing to walk down, it's a little bit of a downhill, to this place called Macenta Grounds, which has a couple of soccer fields. I was going to say pitch. Soccer fields down there. And there's a lot of people just kind of hanging around down there. I said, go down there and talk to some people and tell them what you know about Jesus. And they said, I don't know. I'm kind of slow of speech. I don't really know how to talk. And I'm like, wait a minute. Let's read the Bible here. What did Moses say? And what does God say later? He says, God's wrath was going to fall on Moses because he wasn't willing to speak. I'm like, you don't want that to happen, do you? Do you? So I got them to go, and they went down there, and they had an exciting time. And so I said, okay, well, just go down for an hour and a half, and then I'll meet you at this other location with my van, and then I can give you all a ride somewhere. And they said, okay, we could do that. So they kind of went out, spread out through the village, and all walked in different and, you know, talked to different people. So I sent them out two by two, and they were going to meet me at the van an hour and a half later. You know, they wanted to use Moses' excuse, but I reminded them what God would say, and so they went on their way. Then they said to me, wait a minute. We're too young. You know, you're old. And I'm like, yeah, but I attract too much attention. You're old. You can go talk. No, I said, what does it say? Ah, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak, and I'm young. Don't send me. I'm too young. And God says, no, I will put the words in your mouth. That's what God says in Jeremiah chapter 1. I'll put the words in your mouth. So off they went, and they came back where they met me, where we were meeting at this designated location. Some of them, it took them almost 2 hours to get there. You know why? Because the more they interacted with people, the more they found it fun. They were like, it's scary, and you don't know what you're going to say. And then there were a few instances where people would refuse to listen to them or talk to them. But they had good encounters. They shared what they knew about Jesus, and people asked them questions. And they said, boy, we need to follow up with that guy. I got his name and his phone number. We'll follow up with him. And so what an encouragement. And sometimes are we like that? No, I don't want to go there. I don't want to speak. We're afraid. But if you do it, all of a sudden it's like, wow, God, you came through. As if you thought he couldn't, right? But he comes through and he encourages you through that. So it's fun. They come. They were laughing as they told their experiences. They were all, oh, we saw you go over there by these people over there. We saw these people over there. How'd it turn out? And so no more excuse on that, right? That was great. It also makes me think of the parable that Jesus tells, right? So this guy decides to throw a big banquet. And he gets the banquet all ready. He gets all the food all ready. He sends out his servants to go get the people that had been invited to the banquet. And what do the people tell him? The first guy says, oh, I bought a field. I want to go see it. You mean to tell me you bought it without looking at it? So he doesn't go to the banquet. And then the second guy says, oh, I bought a team of oxen. I want to go inspect them. Like, really? You bought a team of oxen without even looking at them? But that was their excuse. And then the third guy says, well, I got married. Well, we understand that one. I got married. I can't come. So there again, excels that parable. But that's how the kingdom of God is. There's people who are going to have excuses why they don't go. Excuses why we don't do things. Just think about excuses. Do we in our head, I don't really want to do that. I'll give an excuse. But no. There's many excuses we can use. If God has something for us to do, we better not use an excuse. Because it says about Moses the second time when he says, well, get someone else to speak. God's wrath is starting to turn on Moses because of what he said, you know? Because he didn't just follow through and do what God had for him to do. So I got the Barnabas students out, as I told you. So they came back and we said, okay, well, let's do it again. So another time we sent them out. They walked from the center. This time I told them I'd buy them lunch. And so they could meet me this other way and I'd buy them lunch. And so I went to this place. You know, to you, that kind of sounds kind of crazy, but it's a wooden shed with a thatched roof, and they got a big pot of rice, a big pot of sema, which is the corn that they eat, big pots of stuff, and they just slop it on a plate for you, and it costs about U.S. a dollar, maybe. And so they get this huge plate of stuff, and they're all excited. And so I told them I'd meet them down there. We call it Area 13 food. And so they walked all through the Kuali and down around over to where the Area 13 food is. And again, you know what? They were all excited. They were laughing. They had good stories to share because they didn't use their excuses and say, no, I can't talk to people. No, I can't go and do what God has for me to do. And so it's just, they just decided it was fun, you know? I mean, because they had a good time. And so I would like to say about these guys that you saw in the video there, they're meeting and having a Bible study at the center every Friday. My ministry assistant, Joshua, who's going to teach the class hopefully this coming winter, starting in February, he is holding the Bible study. And one of our pastor interns, either Vinny or Joel, is with them. And they're having a Bible study every Friday. And they're getting a lot of these guys, and they're getting some of the other guys from my first class, which went from September to February. So they're getting a bunch of guys to come back. And so it's just that personal connection, being present together at the center, but also getting back into God's word. It's just so important to them. And so it's God working, and he's drawing them to himself. And so as I think about the excuses, and I just want to say, let's not, you know, use excuses. Let's do what God has for us to do. Let's be present with people. And as I said, in Malawi, they told the testimonies. I mean, I really wish. So we had some visitors come in May. It was just, I think, just before Dave came. We had some visitors come, and they came to see what Barnabas was all about. And so there was four of them, and they sat down in our Bible, like in our Bible time was over, and they asked the students, each one, they went student by student, what has Barnabas meant to you? I wish I had taped that. It was just amazing. Because it wasn't just about the teacher. It was about the time in the Bible, learning more about God, hearing what God had for them, and also learning some mechanics, something that they can use to feed their family, but just in their lives. So I'd like to close with this verse. It's from the Passion Translation, which I wouldn't normally read, but I love this verse because they use really strong words. Be enthusiastic to serve the Lord, keeping your passion toward him boiling hot. So are you enthusiastic to serve the Lord? There's things for all of us to do. And in Barnabas, we talk about maybe it's somebody in your house that you need to tell this message to. Maybe it's just a guy across the dirt road that you need to talk to because they're easy access. Maybe it's somebody that you work with or go to school with or someone that you know that needs to hear what God has for them. And when, you know, in a normal saying, wow, that really struck me. Maybe God will lay some on your heart. Man, they need to hear it too. And you have to make that effort. No excuse. Oh, I'm too tired. Oh, I don't want to get back in the car to go over there. You have to make that effort to go and interact with them and say, God's been teaching me this. I want to share it with you. I mean, you can look at me. I'm old. You know, maybe I could have gone on the mission field earlier. My wife and I actually talked about it when I worked at a company for 12 years and felt like that wasn't the call in my life to just keep working there. And we were looking at missions, and the church we grew up in, we came from Connecticut, and our church had just sent four families on the mission field. And I talked to the pastor, and he goes, yeah, that'd be great. I'm like, okay, but there's other options out there if you look into them. And at the same time, we were thinking about becoming dairy farmers. Okay, I grew up in a suburban neighborhood. That's like a really crazy thing out there. And I knew this guy that had a farm that I would go and help out once in a while. We said, let's buy a dairy farm. What's the worst thing can happen? We go out of business, right? So we did, and God blessed us, and he took care of us. But, you know, you make excuses. You're not sure what you want to do, and you got to just trust what God has for you and take that. And so I can stand before you, not that I'm some great person that made great choices. I just tried to follow what God had for me each and every day and just try to keep going. Sometimes it's hard. And my wife loves Elizabeth Elliot, and she said, just do the next thing. And sometimes think about it. So we had a house we never had more than 10. We had 10 kids living all together in the same house. Sometimes it was like, just do the next thing because you just got to keep going. You got all this, maybe what seems like chaos. So it's not that chaotic, but maybe it seems like chaos because you got laundry and you got dishes and you got food and you got all these people. And sometimes my wife says she just wants a break, go sit out in the car with nobody there. Because there's just all these people there. You know, now we're whittled down to just a few, but, you know, just all those people. And just do the next thing God has for you. Just do what God has for you, whatever the next thing might be. And be enthusiastic to serve the Lord and whatever that might be. I see you're going to do this kids club. I hope you all signed up to help. My personal test. And so every time when our church that we go to here in Hoosick Falls, when it's time for VBS and they'd say, well, we need volunteers, I'd stand up and say, anybody can do something for 1 week. You can put up with loud kids for 1 week. You can do the sports thing for 1 week if you can stand. I mean, come on. Or you can share the Bible story for 1 week. You can do it. Be a volunteer. Serve the Lord with enthusiasm. You know, get out there and do that for 1 week. And then you can take a rest. So, you know, think about that. You know, if I'm not, God's not saying you got to do this for every single day for the rest of your life. No, sometimes like Kids Club or VBS, it's 1 week. Just get out there and do that. And sometimes in missions, it's a month, 2 weeks, a week, whatever. And yeah, you might be really tired. I'm kind of tired now. We just moved and I've been up late. I mean, one thing nice about Malawi, I should just tell you, is it gets dark at 5:30, so there's not a whole lot of activity after 6 o'clock at night. It's pretty much done. I mean, it just, you do start early again at 5:30 next morning, but I start at 5:30. My wife still keeps me up till after 10. It's like, you know. So one thing nice about being pitch dark is it's pretty much shuts everything down. Right, Dave? Other than a few white people driving around in a car, it's pretty much shut down. So, yeah, just be enthusiastic about what God has for you to do. And if you're not sure, pray. Ask your pastor what gifts he sees in your life where you could use. I mean, to think that, I mean, I'm not a professional mechanic, but I'm teaching a mechanics course because, you know, God's using a little bit that I knew and stretching me and teaching me how to say words in a different language to do the things that we're doing. And all of our things run at the end, believe it or not. So, yeah, and just, you know, keep your passion boiling hot for Jesus because that's what it's all about. So I just want to thank you for this chance to be in your church and to share with you. And I just want to be an encouragement that, you know, I know, you know, sometimes you just feel tired. It's like, oh, I just feel tired. And maybe somebody just needs you to be present in their life. You know, just go over and talk to them, see what they're doing, and, you know, make a difference for Jesus. And, you know, people notice that, you know. You're the person that always comes and prays with people. I mean, just aside from my wife, you know, people come to the ice cream shop. So we run an ice cream shop. I don't know if you knew that part, but we're trying to sell it. But people come there just to be prayed for. They'll come and say, well, I just came because this my son, my daughter, my wife, my husband, whatever, someone just got taken to the hospital. I need someone to pray for me. They know where to go, right? Because she'll pray for people. So they'll come to the ice cream shop. They might eat ice cream, but they come just to get prayed for. And actually, when she opened this year, I was still in Malawi. She wanted to be open for Memorial Day weekend because she wants to do Memorial to Labor Day until it's sold. A guy saw the car in the parking lot when she was getting ready to open it. And he pulled in, he knocked on the door, and she's always a little bit nervous to open, so the side door to the kitchen is just a solid door. Sometimes there's kind of scary things out there. And she heard this knock, and she goes, oh, there's no way to even look out there, and so she kind of peeked out the door, and she goes, hey, what are you doing? He goes, could you just pray for me? My family's going through a rough time. I saw your car, and I knew that you would pray for me. The guy's not a believer, but he knows who will pray for him, and so, you know, that could change his life. And so I'm just encouraged to be present, be enthusiastic for Jesus, because He loves you more than you can even imagine. And I better close with that. Thanks, Rick.